Welcome to the M3 podcast. Your journey to movement, mindset, and medicine starts here. Well, hello, M3 family. I hope you all are kickstarting this year into full swing, whether it's something on your to-do list, let's say, or a deep desire, a passion project, a New Year's resolution. Go do the thing. And if you are listening to this episode while doing the thing, I applaud you. If you haven't yet done it, or if you're doing it later today, take the inspiration from today's interview with my friend Corey Rembarger and apply it to your life when you need that 180 flip like he did. Somebody who I watched grow probably 5 or 6 years now. We both met at Self-Made Training Facility. I was training under a different coach for a bikini competition, and I was watching him holistically help people not just look better, but feel better. He is an expert in mobility training, martial arts like jiu-jitsu, calisthenics, strength training. He is a breathwork coach at Breathe Degrees. He has created his own program online that you can sign up for right now, and is the creator of Zealous Health and Fitness. So go check that out. Go be a part of his program. I watch this person help people move pain-free and, again, feel like their absolute best self. And if you haven't also thought about maybe an addiction or a habit that you can't break, this person shows and shares how he has broken addiction from things like past drugs or other thought processes that have changed his limited ability in life to a limitless potential. So without further ado, welcome Corey Rembarger. Welcome back, M3 family. I have Corey Rembarger here with me, and we are longtime friends, probably from Self-Made. That's been many years, 5 years ago? Mm-hmm. And I see you now at Breathe Degrees, where you are teaching breathwork. And I've listened to your story over several conversations, like having lunch together, walks, all the things. And I am truly inspired by who you've transformed into. I don't know if we can touch on all of the topics today, but as much as we can, I would love to share your story with everyone. Welcome.
Well, first off, thank you. It's an honor to be here. We can definitely touch on whatever it is that we can get to.
Please. So, are you from San Diego?
I'm down here actually 5 years ago. So, that was my first year here when I met you, towards the end of the year.
Really?
Yeah, I've been here March 2018 when I moved to San Diego.
Okay. And where from?
I grew up in Fresno, but I lived a lot of my adult life in Long Beach, Long Beach State.
That makes a lot of sense. This is great. I'm liking this story that you just kind of trickled your way down south.
Yeah, I just relocated to a better beach city, in my opinion. But yeah.
Yeah, Long Beach. Okay, so you, growing up, what was your childhood like?
In a lot of ways, I have two younger siblings, so they're 9 years and 13 years apart. For a majority of my life, it was just me and my mom, had the traditional little childhood. I guess I was kind of like an only child, single parent for a cool amount of time. Moved a lot because my mom, I can't remember a whole lot of my childhood. I just remember like middle school, a little earlier, towards the end of elementary school, I guess you would say, into high school. That's really where most of my memory comes from my childhood for the most part. I don't know why that is the case, if I digged a little bit deeper, but traditional childhood in the sense that, I guess not traditional because I didn't have a dad. Like I had a dad, but he kind of chose substance abuse over me to what I find out later in my life. I was a great academic kid. Like I had straight A's for majority of my schooling. I actually sucked at reading growing up. Now I I'm saying that because full circle, I love to read, and that's what I do, like, very often. Every day I'm reading. Mm-hmm. I was a rebel in school. I was a skateboarder, so I was one of those, like, you know, bad boys for a long period of time. But I was also a really good kid. Like, I didn't do any drugs, and I did really well in school, cared about my academics. That's most of, like, earlier on in my life. I did start to get into trouble, though, when I made a switch from Fresno Unified School District. I went to the school called Baird Middle School. I moved, and I went to Clovis Unified, which actually was a lot better academically, but for some reason, I don't know, that brought out the rebellious side of me. Maybe you're trained into a new school. You want to, like, be a new person. I don't know. You know what I mean? So I got suspended. I did all this. It was my first time ever getting suspended, doing stupid shit. Did well enough. And I went to Clovis West High School in Fresno. It's one of the Clovis District schools. Well enough to go. I applied to 4 colleges to get myself out of Fresno. Like, growing up, I knew that I didn't want to stay in Fresno. Like, it wasn't for me. I can look back on, see, like, how it was transformational in a lot of my growth. But, like, I was that guy, like, man, I want to move to a beach city. I need to live closer to the beach. So I only applied to 4 colleges when I was getting to that point in high school: Long Beach State, San Diego State, Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, and Fresno State. And I got into Long Beach and Fresno. I was like, this is an easy pick. I'm just going to move to Long Beach, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, man. And then I went to Long Beach from 2007. I graduated, like, 2012. That part was gnarly. You're asking about childhood, but going into collegiate, that's where I got into the substance abuse and partying like crazy. And that kind of was a huge transformation into who I become today, because of, if I didn't get on the substances, I don't think I would have stumbled upon the fitness. I didn't stumble on the fitness. I wouldn't become a coach. I wouldn't become a breathwork coach, you know? So, like, that all kind of ties in full circle.
Wait, you're skipping ahead in the book.
I know. All right. Bring me back. Where do we want to go?
So you got into college.
Yeah, so I got into college. I think the reason I didn't get into these other schools because I was undecided. I really didn't know what I kind of just went to college because, hey, that's the next step in life, right? Like, so going to Long Beach State, I moved there 2007. I got into a fraternity. It was a very interesting time in my life. They were cool people. They were all, like, from the Bay Area at the time. I was listening to, like, Mac Dre. I was all about, like, Bay Area music and rap and tall tees and into that stage smoking weed. So these guys were like, cool. All right, cool. I need a... let me find a taste of what I mess with down in here in Long Beach and find a group, tribe of people that I can vibe with, you know? So going to Long Beach State, my first year, do you want me to, like, my first year was, I was partying a lot. I did my first pill of ecstasy, started to go clubbing a lot, doing a lot of crazy shit, snorted my first line of cocaine. That started a shitstorm of a lot of drug use after that. Prior to that, so, like, if I take a step back, in high school, I think middle school was the first time I hung around people that were smoking weed. Up until that point, I had no access to any drugs. I was out of it. And then even in high school, I told my mom that, like, she asked me a question. She's like, hey, have you ever tried any drugs? And I openly admitted, hey, I tried smoking weed. And that kind of, like, the unfortunate thing happened after that. I felt weird telling her the truth because then I started to get drug tested every month, like, randomly. So, like, I talked to her later in life, and I know she was worried that I was going to do other things and she wanted the best thing for me. But, like, for me as a kid, that's like, ma'am, you don't trust me. I just told you the truth. Like, what the hell am I supposed to do now, you know? I still ended up smoking weed every once in a while, and I got in trouble. I would get grounded. But I never did anything harder than that until I went away to college, and that's where I had more access to it. Cause I was, like, seeing people in high school doing drugs, skipping school, ditching school, doing cocaine, partying, doing a lot of crazy shit. I was like, it's just not for me. And then come to find out in high school or in college, I'm like, oh wow, this is what that feels like. Okay. I see why you guys did this.
Yeah.
Back to that college, I was going to clubs, we were partying, popping ecstasy. I was going to raves. I remember, like, I think it was one of my fellow the brothers in the fraternity, it was his birthday in January of 2018. That was the first time he convinced me to snort my first line of cocaine, and that was, I hated that drug, but yet I did so much of it. It's like, just makes me super anxious. I'm like, what the hell? Why? I just want more. Like, I don't know.
And who was Corey then outside of partying?
So Corey was still like, I don't know, man. I think like, at the time I didn't know who I was, because I was doing a lot of, I smoked a lot of weed, and I would go to class and I would show up for school and all that sort of stuff. But like, I cared more about partying and I guess in the time meeting girls, doing lots of stuff like that, you know? So my mind was elsewhere. It wasn't really on my studies, because like, I graduated from college as a recreation, I have a bachelor's in recreation and leisure studies. So underneath that umbrella, there's like nonprofit and volunteer services. There is event planning. There's therapeutic recreation, people with like disabilities. There's outdoor recreation. You can become a park ranger. There's all these realms. But I got to the point where within that, I had to choose a major. Like, I have too many credits. Like, yo, you have to figure out what you want to do with your life. No more GE. It's time to actually take some, you know, credits towards your major. So I like literally sat and read a book in front of, like, I looked at all the majors on my counselor, and I was like, all right, recreation, this sounds cool. Let's try this. So I started taking some recreation classes. I liked it because it was a lot of group activities, and like, we were doing more project based, not so much writing. I didn't really like writing at the time. And it wasn't like crazy amount of reading. And we would do a lot of cool projects. Like, I worked, let's say, nonprofit. I remember I worked for Rebuilding Long Beach, where we did this thing where I remember going to mobile homes and like repainting walls for them and like helping them out, like people that were in need and stuff like that. So it was a lot of really cool things. Going to schools, like I remember in LA County, they have all asphalt, no like grassy spaces. And we would go there. I was a part of like the first opening of a park that actually has grassy space for these low income families in LA. So I was like, okay, this is really cool. Cause like, I worked for the city of Manhattan Beach when I got into the recreation, like a major space. Cause I worked as a recreation leader, like in an after school program, working with kids. And I like tied this together in a sense that, for me, growing up as a kid, I looked up to people older than me as like mentors and like inspired by them. And I'm like, okay, let me fast forward this into my later in life, and let me be a positive role model for kids. And like, you know, maybe when they're older as adult, like they'll make a different choice in life because of a conversation we had, or embodiment of like, and I'm covered in tattoos. So then like, you can show them that the tattoo is not really there. Like, some of the nicest people I've ever met are fully covered in tattoos, yet we still have a societal norm of like, and be scared of those people from tattoos, like, you know, gang members or bikers or whatever that is. Like, but I'm saying all that, and because of that, that's how I got into that realm, working with the kids, being a positive role model. This is like also tying into, it didn't really pay very well for me. So like, once I graduated from college and got that major, because you're asking me who I was outside of that, and I tied into this, I started to build myself up into the city of Manhattan Beach, like get supervisor role, etc. But I just got further and further away from working with these kids, and I started working with adults. And it was like, okay, I'm being paid more money, but I don't feel like I'm intrinsically rewarded and helping kids and making as big of a difference as I wanted to. So it's an interesting scenario, because I even after I left that job at some point in time, because after I graduated college, I moved to Thailand and I taught English overseas, started to work with kids again. That job, moving there, leading up to that is like all these crazy things. I went down a bunch of rabbit holes, conspiracy theories, etc. So I wanted to leave America, but I also wanted to make money overseas. So like, there's a lot of things that tie into that. Like, I've gone very extreme in a lot of realms in my life, so much so that like, so right before going to Thailand, I kind of all over the place right now, but so
we're here for it. Yeah.
All right, cool. So like right before going to Thailand, this is 2013. So I moved to Thailand, October, 2013. That year in the summertime, I went to Israel. It was my first time leaving the country ever. So I went on Birthright. Birthright is like a 10-day free trip for anybody that can, that you're Jewish. They'll send you over there to fly you out there. All you got to do is pay for any souvenirs. everything's covered, right? So
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they used to do it till age 32. Now they've changed the age to about like 26, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, I decided to do it that year for some reason. And even going to Israel, like people were like, why are you going to the Middle East? You know what's happening there? You should be afraid. And like, I don't know. I never really liked to let fear dictate and control my life. So I decided to go anyways, which I'm really glad I did because I met a lot of awesome people and it sparked my interest of like wanting to travel to more countries and see the world like from my own eyes versus like, I always compared it when I went there. It's like, hey, you and I, you go to a movie, right? Like, and I'm like, hey, how was the movie? You didn't like it. I go to the movie. I love the movie. Like, it's just my perspective, right? Like maybe you had a bad day before you saw the movie. Maybe it's not your type of movie. Who knows? Like, you know what I mean? Like, so yes. You may not have liked Israel, but I might love it. You may not have liked Mexico, but I love it. You know what I mean? So yes. I got to see and experience it for myself. So I go there. I get the 10-day trip. Man, like the most mind-blowing thing happened to me. For one, you're in the Middle East and like these people are living on edge every single day. Like you could get bombed or have anything happen. You could die at any moment, but they still live their life. And I thought that was like, okay, this is magical. Like life is so fleeting, yet I would not let some sort of war-torn anything get in the way of me still living it to the fullest or still never let that like hinder me or who I am or live in life however I so choose. But yeah, so come back from Israel. Okay. Something changed energetically, right? This like consciousness shift, like to give a little context, I don't really cry very often. That could be a good or bad thing, right? It's very rare that I'm expressing tears, but flying back into Israel, back into America from Israel, it's almost as if I went into this like energetic negative, like, I don't know. I just started crying out of nowhere. Like tears just dropped out of my eyes. I had no idea why. I didn't really try to think too much about it. A buddy of mine at the time who I moved to Thailand with, he started to see some of the things I was saying. And he was like, hey, man, like you want to have a conversation? Like, let's get together. And started to dive down a few rabbit holes with this man. I got into this series called Spirit Science at the time. It was really cool. It was like an animated series on like science and spirits, spirituality, like morphing it together. Fast forward, decided, hey man, like, you know what? Like, let's find a way to leave America. I don't really like the direction it's going. Let's make some money. So looked into all these ways of doing that. They had teaching programs in Thailand, in Korea, in a lot of Asian countries. You can make really good money in Korea. Didn't really want to go to Korea because it was kind of closer to Japan. I was worried at the time about the whole Fukushima, the radiation. I don't really want to be there. That's where my head was. I don't really care now as much. I don't want to like, again, be fearful. It seemed like I was fearful at the time of that. Anyways, I chose Thailand. So Thailand, you can make good money. I was making more money than any teacher that was like, the Thai teachers who was teaching there, they would work longer hours than me, and they would get paid less money than me. And then they would also, like, after school, want to take me out to eat and pay for me. And I'm like, wait, what's going on here? So, yeah. I was like, these little, like, aha moments, like, listen, I found people in other countries that had less than me and, like, were happier than me and wanted to do things for me. And I'm like, wow, okay. Not to say that I don't find that in America, but that's very rare. Like more often than not, people have a surplus and they're not as, I changed my perspective on this now. There's very giving people because what you choose to see is what you will see in the world. But at the time I didn't notice any giving people. Maybe I wasn't as giving at the time too. I have to like reflect on that, you know? Now I feel like I give a lot, but that's where my headspace was. And that like shifted my whole paradigm of like, okay, cool. Less is more in the sense that, like, again, they had nothing, would send money to their family, but yet, like, want to feed me, pay for me. I'm like, no, man, like, let me pay for you. I make more money than you, and I don't have a family that I need to send money back to, and they're, like, dirt poor. And so that was, like, a crazy paradigm shift for me.
The amount of gratitude culturally that you see throughout the world, and I, you're right. It is what we choose to see. And I think that that's something that I have stuck in my head where I see it here in the United States. And I'm like, people here just aren't as grateful. We're so entitled. We expect things right away. Mm-hmm. We have a limited patience, a level of patience. And then you see people who it's like, they're just on island time. They're grateful for their families and the simplicity mm-hmm. of the life that they have. And I crave that so much. And I feel like that's something that gave you the aha that you needed to go to Thailand, A, but B, you asked for it almost, I feel like maybe subconsciously or consciously, and you asked for it and went there and got it in different ways.
Yeah, I mean, it all, like, I think that looking back on where I am now, where I was then, leading up to then, post then, man, it all needed to happen exactly how it happened to make me who I am. Even the drugs, everything needed to happen as it happened, you know.
How long were you in Thailand for?
I was only there, I ended up only staying 6 months. So to give a little context, the friend I went there with, he stayed for 4.5 years. So there was no like plan of coming back. But the only reason I came back is so my great grandmother, every time I would get on FaceTime with her, like I could tell that she was deteriorating. I could tell that she was not going to be around for much longer. And this woman's so important to me. She's tattooed on my ribs, right? So like I held her great, I had a great connection with her, and I love her dearly. And I'm glad I did come back, because I came back May of 2014. She passed away the next year of 2015. So something told me I needed to be there, be around her, and spend as much time as I could with her. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I would have stayed longer.
Would you have ever gone back?
Oh, for sure. I want to go back at some point in time. But like the thing I get stuck with is like, for one, COVID happened. A lot of things changed there. But like there's so much beautiful places to see in the world. You know, I just got back from
Tulum.
I went to Belize, actually.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, okay. I went to Belize. I was supposed to go to Tulum, but the retreat got canceled, so I ended up going down to Central America. And Belize was amazing. It's beautiful. Man. I've been to I've been to Peru. I did ayahuasca down there. I've been Iceland.
Talk about that too.
Yeah, for sure.
We can talk Iceland. About. I'm like, let's go through the list and let's go back.
Yeah, I mean. Well, when I was in Thailand, I got to see Cambodia. I got to see Laos. Laos is beautiful. Cambodia is a very interesting culture because of their civil war, you don't see a whole lot of older generations because they like killed them all off for the most part. Yeah. There's this like huge age gap. Laos is beautiful. The one thing I really was upsetting about Southeast Asia, and I feel like it's probably the same in a lot of parts of Mexico, is beautiful, pristine landscapes, but also just garbage everywhere. So they don't really like keep things very, the cleanliness is there, it's not there. Like the one thing about us here, granted, we probably take things to landfills and there's just garbage those places, but like we keep our nicer looking areas cleaner, I would say, you know, because we have garbage cans you could toss things into. Doesn't always make it there, but.
And it reflects in places like Bali, Fiji. I see the Pacific Islands type of always. They have good intentions. They do have a lot of respect for their land. But then I don't see things like recycling isn't created there yet. There's no system for it.
Yeah, I mean, but even like, don't jump down the rabbit hole. But like, allegedly, a lot of the recycling doesn't actually get recycled.
Yeah,
so like,
here too.
we have a shitty ass system within that. Like, you know, but it's an out of sight, out of mind thing. So we don't really know much about it. Otherwise, we wouldn't have Plastic Island like we have and all that sort of stuff, you know?
So you went to Peru, and I want to touch on that because you went from doing what are, we would say, like commercial synthetic type of drugs to now I see you shift into a very sober mindset and engaging in intentional plant medicine.
Right. Yeah. So to be clear, I officially stopped doing actual like synthetic drugs aside from smoking weed and sometimes drinking alcohol, which has never been a thing for me. I think I've been sober since about 2013, like right before I went to Thailand. Even in Thailand, I was smoking weed. We found weed out there. But fun fact, I quit weed 2 years ago, which has been amazing. Now let's go to the Peru. So 2018, I moved to right before moving to San Diego, I was working for construction. I was unionized construction, operating heavy equipment. I was an apprentice for the union in Fresno, working for Granite Construction. It's like a Fortune 500 company. And I had gotten laid off January of 2018 because for that winter, usually in the job they were working on, they planned for rain. We worked all through the winter. There was no rain. So we got to a place where we had to halt work, and usually when that happens, apprentices are going to be the first to sit at home because you need your top like operator guys to go to these other job sites, and they didn't need me. So I, in that moment, was able to go, and I went on a trip to Iceland. I went to Iceland. Friend I went with, he had just graduated. He was thinking about moving to San Diego, kind of got into my head about, hey, man, we could be roommates down there. I wanted to get out of Fresno. I didn't really like living in there anymore. I was like, completely doing something that I never saw myself doing, working in construction. I made good money, but like didn't really see myself doing that type of work. I'm glad I did, showed myself I could do it. Now, fast forward, come back from Iceland, February, okay? I was so dead set on moving to San Diego. I found a room like for rent, and that next month in March, I packed up my little Kia Rio and I moved down here and I rented a room. Now, this is all gonna lead up to Peru, because first few months of living in San Diego, I was living with a lady. I was living off unemployment. I knew that that could cover my rent and the food I needed at the time, because I can live pretty scarcely. And this is where it came in, like, okay, I got unemployment. You know what? I thought about personal training. I didn't do it because I didn't want to take away the gym. For me, exercise was my anti-drug. I really got into it when I wanted to get off drugs. So I wanted to find a way to create healthier habits within myself, release some of the same neurochemical stuff that I was getting elsewhere, you know, in a healthier form. And didn't do it back then because I didn't want to get burnt out. Didn't want to, like, I don't know. That was the story I told myself. So when I moved down here, I decided, you know what, I'm going to try this out. I looked into NASM. I got my certificate within a week and a half. Cool.
Quick.
Yeah. I was diligent. I just worked really hard. Yeah. And I was like, you know what? When I'm focused on something, I'm going to make that thing happen. That's just kind of how I get down. I go all in. It's, you know, could be good, could be bad. It served me very well. Got that in a week and a half. Started to look on Craigslist all over. Like, because I didn't get general CPT and I got a special, I was a performance enhancement specialist, I couldn't get hired to any commercial gym. So I found other realms. Like, I ended up working as a strength and conditioning coach for Johnny Faria at Alliance Jiu-Jitsu in Mira Mesa. They had some programs there. So that program, didn't know when I got into it that it actually was going to get cut pretty soon. Like, a few months after, it did get cut. Like, I'm saying all this because my trials and tribulations in San Diego when choosing to live down here was huge, right? So, like, I got kicked out of that apartment that I rented, the room, because I was an early riser, waking up at 5-6 in the morning. The person I lived with went to bed at 3-4 in the morning and told me I was too loud. So I had to find a new place to live. Luckily, after being in the jiu-jitsu gym, met some guys, ended up renting a room up in Oceanside. Okay, so I went from La Mesa to Oceanside. Cool. Now I'm living in a house in Oceanside. The stipulation was this house was also being renovated at the same time, but I'm expected to pay full rent, even though at one point in time, out of a 3-bedroom, 4-bedroom, 3-bathroom house, there was 3 bedrooms accessible and 1 bathroom accessible at one point in time, right? So, like, that was real fun, and still paying whatever rent they asked for, even though that we didn't have access to everything. Now, this ends up being from, let's call it June till about October, okay? That happened. So I, in between that time, I met a guy who trained at the jiu-jitsu gym. He introduced me to DMT, okay? So DMT is like a synthetic form of what is going to be released when you're actually, DMT is actually in absolutely everything, but because of the fact that you have to have what's called an MAOI inhibitor. So it, like, allows the DMT to impact you. Like, there's DMT in our foods, there's DMT in everything.
In our lungs.
Yeah, in absolutely everything. So so I got put onto DMT and I did some heroic doses of DMT. And I had very, let's call it come to God, understanding, like, there's more than what the 5 senses show us within the world. I just had these profound experiences. After doing a couple of them with him, this gentleman says, hey, man, because he had already gone to Peru and done ayahuasca before. He's like, dude, I think you would be perfect. Would you, if I go back to Peru and do ayahuasca, would you want to go with me? Like, I think that it would be perfect for you. It'd be a perfect experience for you. Now, before him saying that, I knew about ayahuasca 5 years prior, but it didn't call to me. I wasn't had the intention of going to do it. Now, fast forward, I get called to it because it's calling me, because he's like, I'll find the place to go. He found everything. He's like, he just told me the price. This is what you got to pay. This is where we're going. This is the day we're leaving. The flight, the ceremony, all that stuff. Dude did it for me. Ayahuasca did it through him for me, etc. Right? Universe working through him, God working through him. So I was like, oh man, this sounds like I definitely need to do this, you know? So in October, I go to Peru for 2 weeks. I have a, I'm supposed to have two ceremonies of ayahuasca down there. I only have one, the very first, the first night that we're there. I'm only in there with three other people, the two guides, a gentleman and his wife. He's a student at a college there and he's studying plant medicines for his thesis. And he's like, we are a part of like the studies for him to turn in for work and whatnot for the school. Wow. Which is really cool. So, but the crazy thing is like three people around me, first night we drink it. For one, man, like I'm about to drink this drink and like, I'm scared. Like I'm shaking as I'm putting this and like, here goes nothing, right? Like who knows what's going to happen right here. And I remember going into it, it's like an on and off wavy thing. Like if anybody who's listening has ever done LSD, LSD is like this, like you get these peak experiences. Or even like ecstasy sometimes is like a high, then you come out of it. Nah, not so much, but LSD for sure. You have a high, then you're like baseline. Okay, I'm kind of back in reality. And then you're like, whoa, here I am again. I'm back in there. So that's how ayahuasca is done at night. So most ceremonies are done in the evening because like, I don't know. I think it's just
too stimulating during the day. That's how I felt from DMT.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. So they do... They play Icaros. They're in controlling the I guess the vibration, the energetic stuff in there. Like to be with a guy is important because when you take ayahuasca, you open yourself up to like the whole everything, dark, light, etc. So you don't know where you're going within those realms, right? So these people all around me, I remember they're purging like crazy, physically purging, throwing up. I'm like sending like loving vibes to these people and saying like help heal them, etc. I didn't purge physically, which I did internalize and I thought about it a lot. Like, why don't I throw up? What the hell's going on?
Hey, M3 family, check this out. Whether you're a fitness enthusiast or someone looking to take that first step towards a healthier you, First Form's got you covered. Their high-quality supplements are designed to help you perform at your very best, from premium protein powders, complete micronutrient packs, and cutting-edge pre-workout formulas that will kickstart your workouts. First Form is all about getting real people, real results, and I'm one of them. I've been using First Form supplements consistently for over 2 years now, and the difference in my overall health is incredible. I've been hitting new personal bests in the gym, getting better quality sleep, and feeling completely energized throughout my entire workday. What sets First Form apart is their commitment to quality and education. They provide the best nutrient-dense ingredients, plus their products are backed by rigorous testing and research. And guess what? They've got a special offer just for M3 listeners. Click the link in the show notes to explore the full range of supplements and receive free shipping on your next order. So don't wait. Take the first step towards a healthier, happier you with First Form, because I know your goals are within reach and I'm here to help you crush them. Thank you, First Form, for supporting our show, and thank you all for listening. Now let's get back to our podcast.
I had tested it to like, I've been vegan for almost 10 years.
I was just about to say, was it your diet? Yeah, because you had clean food in you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And you have to cleanse a whole month. They ask for a month in advance. So you cut all meat out, you cut caffeine, you cut cannabis, you cut all this stuff, but I was already doing that. So I kind of was like, maybe that's it, you know? But I also was like, okay, well, I mentally purged, I emotionally purged, I psychosomatically purged, like spiritually purged. I just didn't physically get anything out. Maybe I just didn't need that data, you know? But I did have profound experiences, because the takeaways for me, three things come to mind. So the one was that really made me go all in. So first thing is like, you are constantly doing all these different things. You're trying so many different things, like go one thing and go all the way in. And the thing that stood out to me was like coaching, right? Okay. I've never gone all in on the personal training business, right? So that's the thing I came back and I went 100% in on. The other thing was like, you want to connect with more people, but you have people around you that you don't even know. You're not even connected with, right? And I had to think about that. Like, I don't have these, at the time, I wasn't having very deep conversations with people. And I realized that that's a true thing. And now I'm at this point where like I connect with people on like such a deep level, and I really love asking questions, and I like learning about people and learning how their mind works and how they got to where they're at and what their life story is. It's really interesting, especially like in Breathe Degrees. I have so many crazy conversations with people who are like, man, yeah.
You should host a podcast.
Listen, this is like the 10th time I've heard this and I've thought about it. I definitely appreciate that. And then the other thing was was the last one.
So you were there for one ceremony only?
One. So I'm there for a whole week. So we do one, come out of it, like it's a 12-hour experience. Like, you know, like the first 3 hours they're with you, then they go to bed, and then I'm laying there with a friend, and like we come out of it and I'm talking to him, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm back in it. And then eventually I end up having to work my way down to bed and lay in bed, and you're not sleeping at all that night. But like, it was a weird thing. At one point in time in the morning after it was all over, I look in the mirror and it's like a snake shedding its skin. Like it's like we have a reptilian part of our brain, right? Like the emotional part. I'm like, maybe like we're all part snake. And I'm like just shedding some exoskeleton, some layers, some whatever you need to get rid of. But so the next day comes, we ate breakfast, and they kind of like they told us in advance that, you know, some people end up wanting to opt out for their next ceremony. We'll talk to you in the morning, see how you're feeling. The medicine told me I didn't need another one. And I think because I've had such a, like mine, so many people I've heard talk about darkness and like just like heavy emotionally releases and stuff like this.
And the second one as well, the second ceremony, I hear that a lot.
Yeah. And I had this very light, peaceful, like, very expansive, and it was eye-opening for me. So I was like, you know what, she told me I didn't need it, and everyone opted out. All the other three people decided they didn't want to do it too. So it was like something was in that brew or that night just told us we didn't need it, so we didn't. But the next day we were supposed to do San Pedro cactus, like which is mescaline, or they call it San Pedro cactus. So it's like basically nature's like Molly for the most part, and you go in the waterfall and you chill and you're just like meditating. And I was like close, full circle. So they're like Mama Ayahuasca, Papa Wachuma. There we go. They call Wachuma. It Wachuma. Yeah. So that's like that. And then, yeah, so it was supposed to be like the yin yang duality, you know, like tie it all in first full circle. And we also like, we did a ceremony prior to it. They had like a traditional, was it Inca people down there? I don't know exactly. I'm very sorry to my cultural folks, but yeah, like this guy came from a tribe and he did this whole ceremony before we drank it and went to the waterfall. And man, but like I said, those three takeaways, two of which I named coming back from Peru, is when like, yo, I decided I found Self-Made online. I went all in, I went there, and then I just decided to go full circle on the coaching business. You know, they promise you to help you build your business. They did in some ways, but other ways, not so much.
So then Zealous was born.
Yeah, for sure. Zealous Fitness, health and fitness. I saw them, the people that were in there, cool, all looking successful, etc. Like, okay, I can feed off this energy. Maybe I can learn some things. Picking everybody's brain. I was constantly picking your old coach's brain, Candace. She was doing really well business-wise. She loved it because I was always asking her questions, and she was like, man, you're so receptive. I appreciate it, you know, because people will ask questions, but then you don't see them implement. Like, no, I was just like a student, a sponge. I'm taking this all in. I need to learn from you guys. You guys can all teach me something. Everybody can.
And Self-Made transitioned into?
So Self-Made, a year later, Self-Made, I left there. I went to another gym. It didn't stay there for too long because the pandemic happened right after that. So like December 2019, I went to the smaller gym in Mission Valley. Pandemic happened March 2020. I transitioned and I was training people in my courtyard of my apartment. I was going to some of my clients' houses. December 2020, I go over to Bird Rock Fit in La Jolla. And that's where like I've been stapled there for 3 years now. Ethan's a really great guy. And I think the La Jolla community has been receptive of me, and I've done really well because of that move, for sure.
It's a very special place there. Tatiana, one of my friends, is a trainer there too. And I really like the aspect, the people, the clientele. It is, yes, quote unquote, a little bougie, but I think that it deserves to be that way. Mm-hmm. The community in itself is a high elite level of entrepreneurs, fitness athletes, everybody.
Definitely.
And then you are aware of finding all of this DMT through your own breath.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Cause like actually Breathe Degrees comes into the play August, 2020. So I have a friend who does a lot of videography and photography. His name's Israel. He shout out Israel. He invited me to the founder of Breathe Degrees, Tyler Forbes, his backyard in Solana Beach. He was running these breathworks back there. He would have like 25 people, and then we would all do Wim Hof holotropic style breathwork, go into a cold plunge post that. It's like 30, 40 minutes of breathwork, and everybody individually goes into these cold plunges. He also had a jacuzzi back there, and we would go cold, hot, cold. Mm-hmm. So at the time, I'm in his backyard. It was cool to hear that we're still having group gatherings and finding people that were not afraid of Corona, like COVID and whatnot. Cause like, I even felt a little awkward sometimes because the times I did meetups at Bird Rock before I went there, everyone's wearing a mask and I didn't wear a mask. So I'm like, I don't know, you know, so I have found a people that were like, not as scared about it as most people, you know, for yes. the most part. So after going a couple times to the backyard, Tyler approached me and said, hey man, like, we're going to open up a studio here in the next year, which would have been 2021. He's like, we are looking for some instructors. I think you would be a great additive to the team. Would you be interested? You know, so, and then that's where, like, prior to his house, I had done some Wim Hof ceremonies. So I was already in the realm of breathwork because I read Patrick McEwen's Oxygen Advantage. I was already read James Nestor's Breath. Like, that was important to me, understanding that. And that's weird because it kind of ties in together, but that was a definite yes. So I started training for him as a breath coach instructor January 2021 with the verbiage of like, hey, we're going to open in March. Well, we didn't really open until July 8th, 2021. And then from then we built to what we built now. Like, I was teaching classes with one person in class to where a full class at the studio now is 28, and consistently have like 28 people showing up at like a 6 a.m. class for me every Tuesday, Thursday. And then, yeah, a lot of my classes tend to fill up.
You blew my mind. Hearing you coach is phenomenal. You are amazing at what you do. You're natural. And it's really cool to be in a space where we feel comfortable, we feel safe. And it's funny how we get to be the ones that feel heard, but yet we're listening to you. And you had said something so clear to me that hasn't left my mind, where you say, we never actually fix things. Things fall apart, so new things come together, and nothing's ever fixed. And that to me is, it's so true. If I, you know, just break this couch, I don't put that piece back together just by the way it was. You had to put in energy and effort, whether it was screwing it in, putting a new piece of glue, putting in a new piece in itself. Maybe getting a new couch, right? So things aren't just put back to where the way they were before. There's energy that goes into it that makes it a different form than what it was before. And I feel like that's us as humans. Right. We're not, nothing's wrong with us, first of all, but like we think that we're so broken or we're falling apart. But when we get new energy that comes in, there is a new form that comes from us. We're not reborn again. We're not fixed. We are a new version of ourselves. And that also comes with every breath that we take.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's beautiful. I mean, it's like ever unfolding anyways. Like, even in that moment of that being broken, sometimes like our ideology of like, man, this is the worst thing that could happen, whatever that is. Like, but if you look back in hindsight on anything that's ever happened to you, in air quotes, or like anything that you perceived as that, it's probably the greatest thing that could ever happen to you, because you wouldn't be right here in this couch sitting next to me if that didn't happen to you. You wouldn't have evolved to the level that you are right now. I love the Japanese, like, there's that whole, like, if a glass breaks, right, what do? They fill the cracks with the gold, right? So they, like, and then there's people that talk about, you don't know your true look capacity to love until you've had your heart broken, because that really just shows you exactly how much you love or care, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, the thing, it's that whole, I forget who said this, but nothing is inherently good or bad. It's your perception. You choose to choose whatever you put on that, right? Things are just as they are. Mm-hmm. That's really just all things, that everything in life is perspective. So if you can shift and choose the perspective of that's like going to help you grow and it's going to help you move forward, not the one that's going to, like, we can't control big T, little T traumas. We can just control like what we do with that energetic resonance, or how we choose to perceive that moving forward, because nothing that has ever happened to your life, you can change. You can just change the way you choose to see it and the message you tell yourself and the way your body responds to it.
I like that term, using trauma as energetic resonance, because we oftentimes think of trauma being this horrific thing that happens to us, but it could be a super positive thing that also happened to us that charged us energetically in that same manner as maybe something that is quote unquote negative.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's again, it's like it's how you choose to fuel that. Is it going to like feel heavy and depress you and make you smaller, or are you going to like jet fuel that to push you forward into like your evolution or the growth or whatever that is, you know? Like, yeah, it's really everything in life is like, it's in here, it's in your mind. Your mind creates everything around you. So what are you choosing to see? How are you choosing to see it? How are you going to use that energy for yourself? Mm-hmm. Or are you going to let it use you?
Ooh, are you going to let it use you?
Yeah, I mean,
the mind will never stop.
Think about the mind. Well, I mean, like unconscious, conscious, more things are happening in your subconscious. That's controlling more of you on a daily basis and you are consciously aware of it. So clearly, if you are not programming yourself in that same way, you're being used in some way. And if you're choosing to realize that or not, it's your call.
Yes. Okay. A couple of questions I want to spitfire at you.
Sure.
Is that when you were in Peru and you knew that coaching was calling your name, what about it told you that I'm going to be a coach? Why that path? Part two is, what's been the best thing about being a coach for you? And I know you love being a breathwork coach. I think probably out of all, I'm sure you have some favorite clients over the years, but I can see that lights you up just being with you right now. What has been your favorite experience so far with being a breathwork coach?
Okay.
Profound moments, maybe.
So coaching, the reason coaching stood out to me in Peru and the ayahuasca ceremony and choosing that was because, so when that position kind of got kicked at the jujitsu gym, like I was like, okay, well, what do I do now? And because I had the bachelor's in recreation, I also applied for the city of San Diego, and I went back into that realm as a recreation leader. So, and then I was also, let me take a step back. So before I got the job for San Diego, I became the manager of the jujitsu studio under Johnny, because he liked my vibe and he wanted to help me, and he knew that I needed money to make it in San Diego. And I went from making some money there to making nothing. So I became his manager there, but he could, over a few months, he could tell that wasn't really something I wanted to do. So I ended up we decided to part ways in that, and I stopped doing that. And I had got hired on to City of San Diego. So when I came back from Peru, I was working for that temporarily. Okay. So I was working down in National City at this park where, man, unfortunately in that area, it's so very economically, there's a lot of poverty there. There's people in the parking lot that are selling drugs, doing drugs. There's no kids. Like, I came from Manhattan Beach where kids are coming to this program and I'm just setting up games and we're running full structured games and playing, to where they want me to come on and build a program. I don't have any kids coming there. So like, I maybe have one or two kids come and we shoot around a basketball. But outside of that, their families don't even really want them to leave the house because of what's going on there. So I'm like, man, you're having a high expectation. I can't just build a program in this place where the kids, usually it's the opposite. They come to me, I do the fun, and that's it. So when that happened, I went to Peru and I was like, you know what? Like, this is telling me, why are you going backwards? Let's go ahead and try this, because you haven't tried it yet. And you really had fun when you were doing it. And honestly, the reason I chose to coach was because every realm I went to, construction, sales, recreation, teaching, all these people, I was working out because I found that. And it was like making everything exponentially better. Like, I felt better. I was more vibrant, and I saw them not do that. And like, they would always give excuses, like maybe they're chasing money for, like they want to focus more on their career. It's too hard. But like, for me, I was like, man, it's a scapegoat guy. So I was like, let me show people it could be very simple. Let's make it fun. Let's do this. So like, that lit me up. And I was, that's why I went into the coaching realm. It's like, you know what? I want people to realize this is going to make your family life better, your friend life better, your work life better. And it's not as hard as you really want to make it. Like, it could be very simple. It doesn't have to be a crazy kill yourself in the gym. Like, I was a guy who was like doing 2 a days, 2 hours a day, twice a day, hurt myself. Like, don't be like me. I went way too extreme. You know, like, let's, 30 minutes is great. 45 minutes is great. You don't need a whole lot. That's why I went to coaching. That's why I feel like that told me to do that. Because I think, again, I was trying to like go backwards to something that's like, I already saw this through. I know where this goes. Let's try this. And that was the one thing in my mind, the story. I was like, I really need to give this a go, you know? because I was having fun doing the group coaching for the strength and conditioning program in the jiu-jitsu. Second question was, repeat that one for me.
The best experience you've had with coaching.
Man, best experience I have with coaching is... So I think it's been able to give me, relight a fire under myself and remind myself that it gave me a lot of confidence in myself as a human being. I think that's the best thing I received from that, because when you get into an industry, and I had a lot of friends that were already doing this, and they're like, you know, you're like, am I cut out for this? I didn't go to school for this. Can I be good at this? And there's this comparisonitis, right? But then when I start working with the best in the world at what they do, whether that's like kickboxing or like professional athletes, like, okay, these awesome, very good at what they're doing are trusting me. I need to realize that I'm really good. And I get good at things that I go all in on. I don't want to be better than anybody. I want to be the best I can be at what I do. So like, I had to give myself that. I think that best experience would be that reminder of, dude, okay, these people are that great. They're the best in the world at them. You must be one of the best of the world at what you're doing if they're choosing to work with you and trusting you.
And then breathing and so, being a breathwork coach.
Breathwork coach, man. I think that for me, that's amazing in the sense that I'm able to, I have weird thoughts in the sense that like I look at the world a little bit differently. I have a very spiritual like mindset on stuff, and I read a lot of cool things, and I finally found a group of people that I can express these things with and they're receptive to. And more often than not, I'm speaking as if I'm speaking to me, but I know somebody in that room needs to hear it. And when you have a group of all these people, like, you know, that thing you said, I don't know who needs to hear this. I need to hear that, right? I've been going through this. You don't know what I've been doing with, like, when you have people message you on Instagram, when you have people like, you know, come up after you and say like, man, that wasn't one of the most profound things I've ever done, or like, you are amazing at what you do, or like, I'm in there, because I still have like imposter syndrome every once in a while. My mind is like, dude, that was the worst class ever. What the hell are you doing? Like, you are not good at this. And then you come out and somebody's like, dude, that was the best class ever. And I'm like, that reminder of like, dude, it's never about you. It's about them. Don't forget that. Like, you know, so I tell myself that even if sometimes I will say some of the same things over and over again, more often than not, they're not paying that much attention to it. If I can say it with the same conviction, the same passion, treat it as if it's the first time every single time for these people, they don't care. They show up for that experience that you give them. So that to me is like, I just got the rewarding stuff I was getting from helping kids, but now I'm helping these humans that are going through traumas, that are like youth, like early collegiate and adults, and like double my age, and that they're still saying they learned something from me. Like, that to me is just very, like, I don't know, so rewarding, so powerful. It's so beautiful. And to hold the space for somebody and make them feel safe. And, you know, half the time some people are just releasing, there's crying in there. There's these just, man, it's something that's so hard to put into words, you know?
It's that beautiful.
Yeah, for sure. It's just such a powerful thing. And you're the thing that frustrates me sometimes is like, I don't like the dynamic of student breath instructor. Like, no, I have to remind you, I'm a human just like you, right? Like, I have problems, I have stressors, etc. Like, it's almost if some people like put you on this, like, there's this level thing, this pedestal thing, or whatever that is, right? You know, and I'm just like, No. I've gotten really good at what I do, but you can get good at it if you really wanted to do that too. Like, oh, I'm no guru. I'm not leading you anywhere. Like, you know what I mean? I'm just showing up. I'm a guy who's experiencing life and just sharing you what I'm experiencing. And I guess you needed to hear that.
Yes. And I see you leading by example with how you use physical activity to help battle the demons of your, where you're saying, I needed an escape. I needed a scapegoat, was what you were really saying. You're like, I needed something out of my patterns that I was doing. And I knew that they weren't good for me, but I couldn't help myself. And so using physical activity as a way to mentally take care of yourself and to get yourself not just physically healthy, but mentally and emotionally healthy and spiritually strong as well. And then you have clients who are, correct me if I'm wrong here, because I remember this one gentleman who, such a light, had come up, given you a big applause, was wishing everyone a great day, was going around saying hi to everybody.
Mr. Charlie.
You know exactly who I'm talking about. And I think, does he have Parkinson's? So he goes there every morning and has a profound experience every single morning that changes and cures his symptoms of what he experiences from Parkinson's, where he's able to walk and move without that pain, that discomfort, the shaking that happens. And that is the power of breath, just in itself, as an example.
Yeah. And I think community too, because like, oof, that guy's an amazing human. He's cut his medicine in half. He still takes some Parkinson's medicine, but like recently he came in, he recently had to start working again. And because he used to own his own company, but so he sometimes has to leave early because he starts work at like 7, and he came in for a 6 a.m. class. And prior to that actually coming, he's like, I don't think I'm going to come on Tuesday because I have to work early. And I was like, okay, well, why not breathe for like 3 rounds or something? He's like, I don't know, I'll think about it. He came in that morning. He came in early, and I was like, you're not going to be, he's like, I'm going to have to leave early, but I had to show up for you guys. Like, I can't not come, you know? And I was like, okay, well, don't you have time? Why don't you go plunge before the class? He's like, no, man, because every morning I get there at 5:30 on Tuesday, Thursdays. He's roughly there around 5:40. We hug every person that comes in that class. We're like that. We're like the welcoming squad. Like, I know every person's car that walks in, I'm like screaming at him. We both give him a hug. He's like, I couldn't miss this. He's like, these are my people. Like, I don't care about plunging. I'm just going to breathe. I wanted to show up for them. I wanted to show up for the tribe, you know? So like, I would see him sometimes at the beginning of class, he has the tremor, and he's still at the very end of the class, you know, and the medicine that this place has provided for him. And I think the space to have a community of people, which, I mean, we're human, we're social beings. We need a community, you know, like that's one of the things we need as like a necessity.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So why does cold plunging pair with breath work?
So man, I think that the breath work that for us, how we're going about it, I wouldn't recommend this type of breath work that I'm teaching to people for everybody, right? If you're already like, if you need down regulation, if you need like parasympathetic to calm down, this is not something you do all the time. Like, it's kind of like HIIT training in the sense that maybe 1-2 times a week is going to be good for you, right? Like HIIT training, high intensity interval training, not sustainable to do 6-7 days a week, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to break down very fast. You might see very quick results. Sustainability wise, not so much there. Now, it's necessary in the sense for some people to come because we're ramping your nervous system up and it's able to finally calm down. Whereas like, because there's this like progressiveness of like slower, getting a little bit faster, and then the last breaths are very quick. It's almost hyperventilative, superventilative is what they're calling it these days. But I think going with that, going to the meditative state, and then at the end, when you get, we call it drift, it's like savasana at the end of yoga, it's like go where your mind takes you. If I can get your calm there, then you go do something hard right after there. So those two just paired together. It's like some people like cold plunging before the breath work too. Like it's really a mix and match. Like everybody that comes, my like recipe for them is like, hey man, you're like your greatest end of one scientific project. Let's go ahead and like, maybe you really need the 6 a.m. to set the tone for the day, check the box off. Man, if I do a cold plunge in the morning, the rest of my day is amazing. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're that mid-afternoon, a little pick-me-up. Maybe you're the evening time person. I don't know. Like, I don't know your lifestyle. I don't know you. Figuring more out about you is going to help you decide what is the best. I think everyone will benefit from it. Now, amount of time per week, it's going to vary, protocol, etc. But I think that all going together, if you do something to get you into a meditative state, and then you do a really hard thing when it comes to the cold plunge, just like working out, like, and the discipline of that. We don't work out every day because we want to. We work out because we know we're going to feel better after. You never walk into the gym and say, man, that was the worst workout ever, unless you get injured. Now, you're never going to go into a cold plunge and say, like, hey, I wish I wouldn't have cold plunged today. No, you're not going to say that. You're going to leave and you're going to, like, I have a picture of me, Charlie, and this other gentleman, Jivan. We took a picture together before breathwork and cold plunge and after, and just the glow of afterwards is amazing. It's just so cool to see how you just light up and just like smiles are bigger. Like, I don't know, there's just something about it.
There's so much anxiety before, but there's never a regret after.
No, never, never. Yeah. I mean, it's like, oh man, it's so powerful. And I would say within the last 2 years, so I went from strength training almost every day to like cutting that into, I only strength train 3 days a week. I cold plunge and sauna 3 days a week. And I train jujitsu 1 to 3 days a week. Now finding that balance, which has been one of the hardest things in my life, but adding the cold plunge in for the recovery aspect of the training jujitsu and the strength training has been the biggest game changer for most of my physical and my mental. Like, I think that that's the one thing. Like, it's like, do hard things. Doing hard things makes the things in life that seem hard less hard.
Mm. And the protocol for biohacking. So you're right. Sometimes I need to mentally prepare and do breath work before I get into cold plunge. Sometimes I just want to get the, I want to rip the bandaid off, get the hard thing out of the way. And then I want to relax myself. And I feel like I can get into an even deeper meditative state, having done something that's made me super anxious before, or like got my adrenaline up.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if you've ever been, oh, of course you're a kid. You're like once in your life, everybody is. But as a kid, like I always think of like puppy sprints where like the puppy's like running, running, running. And then they fall and they take a nap for like 5 minutes. Right. You know, it's like the little kid in me wants to go and do like the super energetic thing and then just crash really heavily because I got the hard play out of the way. And then I am somebody who, oh man, this was really hard for me. You got me in the hot tub and then back into the cold plunge. And once I'm warm, I'm warm, and I like to stay in my comfort zone. Yeah. And so to do that was even more of a challenge. But I'm curious, what would you say is like the preferred or the most common biohacking method, from breath work, cold plunge, hot tub, cold plunge, sauna, that way that we did it?
Well, I think that context matters a lot in that, in the sense that like, so the way we have it going down, like, I mean, there's a lot of studies on saying that, let's call it, cold plunge would be a great, if you were going to do it on a day that you're working out, they're claiming one of two ways. You do the cold plunge as the pre-workout, go work out, okay, because that wakes you up. It's having a lot of hormetic effects that are happening there. As opposed to if you do it after a workout, if you're looking for hypertrophy, muscle gains, like 4 hours, 6 hours after would be better. A lot of claims are on, and there's studies on this. I can't cite them personally, but if you work out, go sauna after, well, you're continuing that like hormonal hormetic effect that's happening. So you're going to get more of the neurochemicals and the physiology that's happening from working out. So that's beneficial. I'm more of a, like, I like to cold plunge on the days that I don't work out. Right. So we do 3 minutes. To my understanding, 3 minutes is like the maximum for physiological benefits. You have like thermogenesis benefits, your body's natural way of like generating heat and et cetera. So like, and it's also anything over three to what, from my frame of reference, is going to be like more mental versus physiological benefits. So like if you like need it, say you're going to do cold activities and you need to be in the cold for longer, well, you're probably going to want to stay longer. So you start to have your body adapt to doing that type of stuff. Like when it comes to biohacking, it really comes down to like, what are we biohacking for and in what manner? You know what I mean? Like, so it just depends as always, you know what I mean? Like, what does this person before me need? Like in your case, when you speak of biohacking, what are you referring to? Like, what comes to mind for you?
For me, biohacking is more of a mental health. So am I stuck in negative thoughts? Is my mind racing? What can I do to clear the thoughts out of my head that feel maybe just icky or stuck?
I would go into that cold if I was you and you were feeling that way and you didn't want to until you have quiet in your mind.
Oh yeah, yesterday was 5 minutes for me, and usually I'm like a 3 minute out.
It's okay. The moment you can stop focusing on time, the moment you can quiet your mind in a moment and you've actually rested into it, go a little bit longer than that, you're good. I think that once it gets you out of that headspace, that's it. But if you are like, if you're still in the headspace as you get out, I think that you need a little bit more time in there for yourself personally.
Usually I go in with it where all the things, all the thoughts from your day just can pile up together. And then all of a sudden, at the end of it, I'm like, what? I'm super high, like naturally, like, what was I thinking about? What was so stressful?
Yeah, exactly. So then there you go. I think that you're hitting, there's no like set time. Like Huberman always talks about, like, he's like, forget the time duration per se. He likes to talk about, like go in there and overcome three blocks, right? So you go in there and you're like, okay, first block would be, ah, I don't want to be in here anymore. Second block, same thing, right? Like you breathe through it again. And each time you want to get out, you overcame that. And after the third one, you should be good. My fear with cold plunge is like I'm a minimal effective dose person. I haven't changed much. I do like four rounds in the cold and the hot. Like I'll go three cold, three hot, three cold, three hot, three cold, three hot, one cold. And on that last minute, I'm moving around the whole time. I've been doing that protocol 3 days a week for about a year, year and a half. And I still feel as amazing the first time as I do today. I did it today, you know? Now we're getting into this point where ego kind of takes over for everything. Like I've had people that come and they're like, dude, I didn't get a PR today. So I don't have enough time to like go my PR 8 minutes. So I'm not even going to cold punch. Like, wait a second. Does a cold punch help you? Yes. Do you feel better when you're done? Yes. Why don't you do a little bit of time? You may not be able to beat your time today, but you're going to feel better after. Oh, good point. Okay. Yeah. Like it's always like, it's become this like measuring contest. Like
I've noticed that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I even just said it right now where I was like yesterday, but I was also with a friend and I kept telling her, I was like, we were going to go for 3 minutes. And I was like, I'm okay now. Could you do for one more? Okay. And I kept asking, could you do one more?
Right.
Yeah. But you're right. I have friends who are saying like, I did it for 10 minutes, this many minutes. And I'm like, you're going to get hypothermia. I laugh at me. Yeah.
I've had people go in our cold punch for an hour. Like I wouldn't recommend that for anybody. There's a gentleman that's done that before. I've heard it. I haven't seen him personally, but I've heard stories of that. Not recommending it.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, it just comes down to like, I would shy, err on the side of like, be careful of letting your ego take over and be like, okay, you know what I mean? I need to beat this person. I need to beat this person. Like,
or beat yourself like a PR. Because I think of strength training in the gym. And if I don't hit the same thing as a, like on a lift that I did before, I'm going to beat myself up over it. But you're right. Did you get in and have a good workout? Did you feel better after? That's the whole point.
Exactly. Yeah. That would be, to answer all your questions, my recommendation on that.
Thank you. That's amazing. And to close it up here, I always like to ask two questions as far as riding the waves in life. So there are a lot of things in this world that we can control and a lot of things we can't. So riding the waves to me are things that we either ride the wave or we let it pass us or we get pummeled by it. How do you handle the waves in life? The ones you can control and the ones you cannot.
Well, I like that because I've made it a point in my life to tell myself and others control the controllables, right? If something is in my control, I look at what's happening in my life. What factors can I control? Okay, I will focus on that, maybe one thing at a time, see what that happens like after that. And then the ones I can't control, you have to just let it be. It's like I can choose where I throw this rock into that pond, but I don't get to choose where the ripples go. They just go where they go. You just get to choose the direction of where you want to take your life or the rock where you want to throw it and for what reason you're throwing it. So that for me is like taking a look at anything. What is happening to me in that moment? What wave is impacting me? Where? And okay, cool. In this immediate moment of these waves, which one is, let's call it rideable, or I can control it, right? And then the other ones, I just have to let them pass.
Mm-hmm.
Stillness and, you know.
Ooh, stillness. I like that.
And patience. Like I learned even in the same sense of like waiting something out. Like the more anxious and the more you want to control things, the harder it is. But like you're in the middle of it. In the grander scheme of things, again, we're going to look back in all these things and like be like, oh, there's a bigger picture. There's more going on here. Maybe I need this for my next level of evolution, my growth, whatever that is, you know?
And last little bit of advice for anybody who's interested in maybe changing their lifestyle from drugs, medication, breathing. What would you give somebody as advice? And I'm just thinking day-to-day client that you probably have going through these struggles in their own version. What would you tell your client or aspiring person that's listening right now who says, I'm afraid to do the hard thing. I'm going to avoid it at all costs. Is there anything else that I can do? Is there a magic pill? Or do I just do the hard thing?
Okay. So like on that, I love this Chinese proverb, everything is hard before it becomes easy. So regardless, anything in life you've ever done and you're doing now, what you're good at, if you look back far enough, it was hard at one point in time. So just take the next step. Never give up on yourself. Like even, I didn't go into detail, but like I relapsed a bunch of times. But no matter what, if you how bad you want it, you're going to get whatever out of it. Like effort in will give you stuff back. So it doesn't, again, like even if you're making a lifestyle change and you go walk around your block further than you've walked ever, that's a little bit further than you were yesterday or a moment ago. It doesn't have to be crazy. Go walk to the end of the block. Read one page in a book. You know, if you're feeling low, if you have, I think, a safe space of somebody you can call and talk to, and if you don't, and go to a meeting. Go if NA works for you or something like that. I didn't do that. I don't know what that's like, but finding somebody you can trust and put trust in that would also be there and support, because community is important in that too, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, even if health-wise, buying an actual gym membership is the first thing you need to do. Cool, that's one step in the direction of being healthier. You know what I mean? Next thing, drive, be in the parking lot. Even if you don't make it in, you know, like a baby step. It doesn't matter. Just try one more time. Like I really like when Ed Milet says, like, one more time, you never know what's going to happen. You know what I mean? That one could jet set you forward, and here you are, a whole new human being.
Mm. You know? Thank you, Corey. This has been a great conversation.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Thank you for joining me on another episode as we learned and explored all things movement, mindset, and medicine. As always, my goal for each episode of this podcast is to share innovative tools and techniques to help you thrive and find stability with your overall health and personal development, alongside the growth of the world around us. Please share this with someone you know will benefit from this episode, as well as rate and review. This helps us reach more people and provide feedback as to how we can better help each of you. Make sure to check out our community website, www.mermaidmethod.com, to learn more about our upcoming events, eco-friendly products, and coaching programs. Now let's make massive waves together.